We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
The baseball season is go, go, go. It's nonstop, relentless for every night, six straight months, and then hopefully another month in October. You also have work, friends, family, and a million other things going on. That's when you reach for a Coors Light. It's made to chill. There's only one beer out there that's literally made to chill, and that's Coors Light. I mean, the mountains on the bottles and cans even turn blue when your beer is cold. Is there anything better than opening up your refrigerator after a long day, seeing that icy cold Coors Light can or bottle in your fridge? The answer is no, there's nothing better. That's why when it's time to chill, you choose Coors Light. It's mountain cold refreshment made to chill. Coors Light is the one I choose when I need to unwind. So that's why when you want to hit reset, reach for a beer that's made to chill. Get Coors Light in the new look delivered straight to your door with Drizzly or Instacart. Coors Brewing Company, Golden, Colorado. And as always, celebrate.
We are breaking down all aspects of Yankee baseball. This is the Bronx Pinstripe Show with your hosts, Andrew Rotondi and Scott Reinen. Let's go. Welcome to the Bronx Pinstripe Show, episode 414. We are rolling on with our AL East previews today. I had the opportunity to talk with, I'm calling him a friend of the show at this point. This is year three of Arden Zwelling from Sportsnet Canada. Sportsnet Toronto covers the Blue Jays up in Toronto, has a podcast, covers them on TV, does radio, does the whole deal. We talked about everything with the Blue Jays. Really, we wanted to obviously get into the weeds of what's happening for the season, when it may come, if it may come, what the deal is with these young guys. You know, we obviously know them as really a thorn in our side, some of the young talent they have up there that has the very, very good prospects of being, you know, an extremely good team, a dangerous team that can get much better because of the talent level. They have some significant talent with Vlad Guerrero, Biggio, and Bichette up there. And Arden, you know, kind of goes through the whole thing, talks about the different aspects of the team, pitching, you know, what we can look forward to when the Blue Jays do come around, and you know, where their weaknesses are and what they're looking at. Also some good details of what happened with the Marcus Stroman fallout and why really that ended up being a trade that was inevitable, had to happen. And then obviously we get into some of the stuff that's going on currently with all of the isolation and the virus stuff, and just kind of figuring, you know, what the Blue Jays' perspective on all that is. Arden is lives in Canada, so got a little bit more of a deep dive on what the Canadian government and what they're doing up in Canada. Obviously, everybody is quarantined at this point up there too. So, yeah, really good conversation with Arden. I always enjoy talking to him. So I hope you guys like the preview. But without further ado, here's Arden Zwelling, Sportsnet Toronto, with our preview of the Toronto Blue Jays.
All
All right, guys, pandemic or no pandemic, we are progressing on through the AL East. I'm excited to introduce again. This is our third year in a row that we have Arden back on the show. But Arden's welling with Sportsnet, covers the Blue Jays up in Toronto. Arden, thanks for coming on, man. How are things going?
Hey, man, happy to be back. Thanks for having me. It's good to talk about baseball at a time like this. For me personally, I am in self-isolation, having gotten back from spring training in Florida a little less than a week ago as we record this. So I got to serve my 14-day sentence here, which I certainly don't mind doing. And in today's world, you know, look at me. I'm here talking to you guys on the podcast. Like at Sportsnet, we've been pumping out content, getting people on the phone and doing our own podcast and writing and then continuing business as usual. But it's an interesting time for sure.
Yeah, no doubt. So when you guys go back into the country, is that a Canada thing where they're requesting or they're essentially mandating a 14-day isolation period? Is that because you're going over borders?
Yeah, it kind of depends when you've returned.
Right.
Like I got back a week ago when it was a recommendation. They weren't, instituting it.
Yeah.
And I believe now, you have to do it. But when I came back, it was just something that was recommended. And, I figured like it was just the smart thing to do. And
sure,
it was the best way to be a good citizen. And, I certainly wasn't going to be going out into any public places or going to work or anything like that. Just, you even think about how quickly this thing changes, right? And how quickly our understanding of it is. Like if we were talking 2 weeks ago, and you brought up, the terms flattening the curve or social distancing or self-isolation or any of this, I would have been like, what are you talking about? And now I understand all that stuff, really well, as we all do. So, our understanding of it keeps kind of progressing. So it depends when you got back. For me, I got back a week ago. And it was just something I personally wanted to do. Just, I just think it's smart and the right thing to do. But now, certainly, anybody who's entering the country, I think you have to go into a 14-day quarantine.
Yeah, I mean, I think you probably had some foresight looking at this a week ago Wednesday, because really Thursday is when everything hit. I guess NBA shut down last Wednesday, so that kind of started the trickle down effect, and you could see the writing on the wall. But yeah, I was telling you before we started recording that we have we had a big event over the weekend last weekend that we had to cancel because of all of this stuff too. But man, did it happen fast? Like as soon as the NBA, as soon as we saw the Utah Jazz start, going down with a couple of these cases, like the pressure from everybody to lay off of all these big events was immense. And you just saw all the big organizations, taking all of this news extremely seriously and kind of following suit. So it happened pretty quickly.
Yeah, it's wild, man. But I think that if we can learn anything from the experience of other countries that have been through this, kind of on the other side of the globe who had their outbreaks a lot sooner, it's that proactive measures can be really impactful. And
sure,
it's that you have to work ahead of it. Because if you get behind it and you start having hospital beds filling up and there's pressure on your healthcare system and you've got healthcare workers working overtime and getting sick themselves and being fatigued and you're stressing your economy. I mean, that's when this thing can really, spin into disasters. It's interesting to hear people saying, the best case scenario is that we're all overreacting.
Right.
And we were all like, oh, we didn't need to do any of this stuff.
Sure.
But like the worst case scenario is so catastrophic that you have to overreact and you have to try to work ahead of it and be proactive. So, I know that's what we're, doing basically across Canada right now. Like where I live in Toronto, the city's basically shut down, public transit's empty. There's nobody's at bars and restaurants. There's no public gatherings. I don't know how many people across the city are working from home, but I know certainly the majority of my company, Rogers, is working from home. These are steps that you have to take in order to try to, like I said, some of these terms we've learned, flatten the curve and get ahead of this thing.
So talking about the Blue Jays specifically, they down in Dunedin, did you guys have, is some of the teams staying down there? I know some of the Yankees initially, really before they announced the long-term periods when groups are going to be allowed. I know a lot of the Yankees were going to be staying around the Tampa area. Since then, some guys have decided to go back to their family, completely understandably, but, how are the core of the Blue Jays handling? Are they sticking close by or have they gone back to their homes? How's the Toronto organization handling it?
It's similarly kind of a mix. And, you know, it's, I think it's kind of developing as we go here. And, you know, like you said, players have three options. They can stay at the spring training home, you know, facility there, or they could stay in Dunedin basically and check in at the facility and use some of the facilities there, or they can travel to Toronto, or they can go home. And I think that you've seen, guys kind of taking different routes. You know, most guys just kind of waiting to see how this thing develops. Like, I kind of feel like we're heading toward the point where players are going to have to be sent home, where they're going to have to close the spring training facility, and you know, they're not going to have these, you know, people coming in and being around each other. But this thing develops so quickly here. And, you know, kind of unique challenge for the Blue Jays is they've got a kind of an international bunch, right? You know, Hyunjin Ryu is the ace of the pitching staff. He's Korean. Shun Yamaguchi is Japanese. He's on this team. You know, Vladimir Guerrero Jr.'s offseason home would be in the Dominican. Lourdes Gurriel Jr., Teoscar Hernandez. You know, they got a Canadian in Jordan Romano. So it's an international group. So it's, you know, you're dealing with a lot of different things here when we're looking at some of the travel restrictions that have been put in place and, you know, the different rules we're seeing in different countries and even just the different spread of the pandemic in different countries. So, you know, everybody has their own decision to make. It's going to be interesting to see how it plays out.
Yeah. So kind of talking about that before we get into the Blue Jays on the field, because we're definitely going to talk about that. I think there's a lot of interesting storylines that are around Toronto, just with the young players that they have. But just to, I'm interested in your opinion about Major League Baseball in general and how you think, like, let's just say for conversation's sake that, you know, we're looking at mid-June, early July as a time where Major League Baseball says, okay, we're going to come back, you know, whether it's with just players on the field and no fans, or, you know, maybe if, you know, extremely optimistic, we're getting baseball as normal. But how do you expect, or what are your thoughts on MLB and handling a shortened season, or, you know, trying to fit in as many games as possible? But how do you think they should go about things?
The way I look at it is you just take this season as like a one-off that is separate from every other MLB season and just treat it as like a little kind of guinea pig experiment, like treat it as an opportunity to like get weird and try different things.
Seriously,
just blow everything up, right? Like realign the divisions, you know, have teams only play within their own league and play every other, you know, team in that league, every other of the 14 teams, once each, home and away, three game series. Get to 84 games, you know, change the playoff structure, expand the playoffs. You know, maybe the top four finishers in each league get to pick one team from the next four finishers to play in a quote unquote first round of the playoffs and go from there, you know, and have a first round three game series entirely in the ballpark of one of those top four finishers and then go on to a second and third round. You know, maybe don't even award a World Series, like maybe create a different trophy for this year and treat it like a tournament, you know, treat it like a just one-off, you know, fun spectacle, because I think that's what people are going to want when baseball returns is entertainment. Like people are going to be so happy to have baseball come back, but the last thing they're going to want to have to think about is how this season compares to others and thinking, well, you know, look, if you win the AL East over an 84 game season, I mean, how does that compare to, you know, the team that won over 162? Because you could see, you know, a team overperforming its projections or underperforming them due to injuries or bad luck or you know, everybody slumping at once. You could see that impact a lot more over a shorter schedule than over a long one. So why not just change everything and treat it as a one-off weird experiment? And in 2021, get back to the 162 schedule, and the World Series, and the regular divisions, and all that stuff. This is kind of a unique opportunity to try some different things and test some stuff out that we've all been talking about for a long time. We've all been talking about maybe shortening the regular season, maybe expanding the playoffs, maybe divisional realignment. Why not try some of these things now and give fans just a really unique, entertaining product when baseball does resume? Because that is what people are really going to want and need in June or July, whenever we do get baseball back, is entertainment and something that's fun. So that's what I'd advocate for.
Yeah, no, it's interesting. We had this conversation actually when Andrew and I talked last, and he thinks very similar to you in the sense that let's get weird. Let's try some new things. Let's add a point system like hockey does. Let's do, you know, whatever sure. it is to somehow, you know, almost handicap what this season is, because it's not going to be, you're right. If we win whoever wins the AL East, there's going to be an asterisk. There's going to be a storyline around it. If there is a World Series champion, is it really going to be a World Series champion? Like, are we all going to think the same about that if it's a shortened season to the point where they would have to shorten it coming back that late in the year? So yeah, there's some weird things. The only thing I'll say about that is that it's baseball. It's an old boys club that's been around forever, and change is it's like the Titanic, you know, shifting gears. So I could see them being afraid that if the fans like it too much, then they're not going to be able to go back to 162. And like, now we really have to change things and, you know, blow up everything. But yeah, I mean, I think that's kind of one of the routes that they should definitely look into. And, you know, because it's not normal. It's not going to be normal when it gets back, no matter what you do.
Yeah, let's get weird, man. Like, so say they come back and they have like a, you know, really quick spring training 2.0, right? Because everybody's going to be so motivated to get regular season games going, because with every game that is being missed right now, teams are losing millions of revenue. The league is missing revenue. Players aren't being paid. Like, everyone is going to be incredibly financially motivated to get this thing going as soon as possible.
Sure.
So I'm expecting like a 2.5-week, 3-week spring training, right?
Yeah.
Spring training 2.0, that is. It's not enough time for pitchers to get stretched out. You know, they're not going to be happy about how quickly they have to get ramped up. You know, you think about some of the spring outings that we see from guys, like, you know, in the kind of that second and third week of spring training games, where they're like, they don't quite have it yet, right? They're still building up and they're still getting the feel for the release point on their curveball, or their changeup isn't quite there or whatever. And you'll see, you know, guys who are otherwise like pretty good starters come out of outings after like getting only two outs and getting rocked by, you know, a spring training lineup that might have some minor leaguers in it, because they just don't have it yet. You might have that happening in regular season games whenever this starts again. So let's get weird, right? Expand the roster to 30 so that you can, you know, piggyback pitchers in an outing, or, you know, get weird with openers and stuff like that. Maybe play 7-inning games, you know, to kind of account for the fact that nobody's going to be ready for this season when you do restart it, and you're going to have this truncated spring training. You know, I just think this is such an opportunity to experiment with different things. And, you know, a lot of the reasons, you know, I think a big reason why we haven't seen a lot of these changes in baseball is not only, as you mentioned, that it's an old boys club and baseball is so resistant to change and progress always, but also that we just haven't seen this stuff in action yet, which is why the Atlantic League's been so great, because you're starting to see some of these rule changes, some of these experiments in action. You get to actually test them and get results and see what works and what doesn't. You know, if you were just trying to pitch the NBA on Elam's ending, just as a concept and abstract, a lot of people go, I don't know, what's that going to look like? But then you run it in the All-Star game in the fourth quarter, and everyone says, this is great. We'd love to see more of this. So once you actually see it in action and you test it, you actually have results of that experiment, you know, I think that can go pretty far towards actually bringing us to a point where people are going to be more accepting of some of these changes that I think a lot of us, you know, who want to see this game progress and evolve and attract younger fans, think are necessary.
And I think that there's a couple of things too. Like, it's not on the field as far as the gameplay, but we saw in spring training where they kind of opened it up a little bit more for the audio, and some of these guys are getting mic'd up, and you're seeing some of the behind the scenes of, you know, conversations on first base, guys at the plate talking about exactly what they're thinking. Like, that Rizzo at bat was phenomenal. You know, like that type of thing, you're seeing little tweaks to the game changes. Yes, that's not on the field, but what that is it's an appealing little tweak that now you're giving the game a little bit more of a window to people who are younger, giving more social clips, giving more of, you know, what is today, how things grow today, socially, virally. I don't know if I could say that anymore, but you're tweaking some of these things. So why not experiment? Because to me, like the mic thing, do that every game. Like, that is gold. We should be doing that no matter what. It's the easiest implementation in the world. Like, put a little delay on it, it's fine. And let's mic these guys up, because it's amazing content.
Yeah, and there's a groundswell of young players in this game, you know, led in large part by guys like Trevor Bauer and Tim Anderson, who want to see things like that, yep. who want to be mic'd up, you know. And you're right, some of the spring training at that's when, you know, you're hearing Chris Bryant talk in the box about, you know, what he's looking for and what he might get, and, you know, being late on a pitch and, you know, having to run out a foul ball or something and being tired after getting up the first baseline. Like, that's something that makes the game a lot more accessible to people. It makes it a lot more interesting.
Yeah. Human too. It makes everybody more human when you hear what they're saying.
Absolutely. You get to know guys' personalities. And, you know, I was like, after the Astros scandal, which, like, by the way, the Houston Astros right now might be the only team in baseball that are okay with everything that's going on.
It really pisses me off, that whole thing. Really, I got to tell you, this whole thing with that narrative pisses me off beyond belief, because yes, they're so pumped up about this and they're pining for baseball to come back without fans. Like, that's so badly. They want that as much distance as they can get with time between them banging trash cans and then back on the field. They're all about it.
Oh yeah, they are skating here. And, you know, after all that went down, I was thinking, like, we must be moving toward the point where the catcher and pitcher are going to be able to talk to each other. You know, where you're going to put an earpiece in the catcher's helmet and or, you know, and a microphone either in the helmet or at the top of his chest protector, and then the pitcher is going to have a little Bluetooth earpiece in, and they're going to be talking to each other, and you could have the manager talking to the pitcher as well. Like, you know, how long in football has the QB and the offensive coordinator been able to communicate? Right. I mean, it's been, you know, years and years. So it's got to be coming to baseball eventually. And I figured that the Astros scandal is going to push that along. So, like, maybe, you know, what this season postponement right now with COVID is the thing that pushes along some other changes and the implementation of, you know, just some other experiments and some other things that a lot of us would like to see in the game.
Let's talk about the Blue Jays on the field. Obviously, you guys have, you know, some young stars coming up. When you look at the offense, I mean, it's one of those, it's a lineup that when I see, you know, I think it's going to be very good this year. I think last year towards the end, second half of 2019, you could really start to see some of these guys getting more comfortable. The Guerrero Jr., Bichette, Biggio, you've seen these guys get more comfortable in the major leagues, and you started to see, you know, it actually show up on the win column and these guys fighting all the way to the end of the game. So how do you see the next progression going into 2020 with these young guys? And how much does something like this, where, you know, we're having a shortened season where, you know, the development stages are really being stunted for some of these young guys, how does that affect what's going on in 2020 with the Blue Jays and the young guys?
Yeah, the Blue Jays are really being hurt, honestly, by the postponement of these games, because, you know, a lot of those names that you mentioned, those are players who are very young in their MLB careers and need this experience now. Like you said, need that development now. You know, Vladimir Guerrero Jr. learned some very harsh lessons last season about his conditioning, about his preparedness for games, about what he has to do to get the most out of some pretty unbelievable potential. And he wasn't able to learn that in the minor leagues because he was just so much better than everybody else. But then he got to the majors and realized, like, I need to be better, and I need to do better before games, after games, away from the field, in order to be my best on it. And that's something that he learned in game. So the Blue Jays aren't getting that benefit right now. You think about a guy like Bo Bichette, who stepped into the majors last year and was remarkable right out of the gate, had immediate success. He's got to swing with a lot of moving pieces and a lot of moving parts. And you got to think that the league, when they get enough video on him and when they start to learn, you know, where he's susceptible and where his weaknesses are at the plate, they're going to start to attack those. And he's going to have to adjust back. That's a process that I was kind of expecting to play out this season. And that's something that Bo Bichette would have learned from at the big league level. He doesn't have that opportunity now. So, I think the Blue Jays are really being you know, hurt developmentally by this postponement. That said, whenever games do resume, they will be able to continue to learn things about those three young players, Bichette, Biggio, Guerrero Jr., about some of their outfielders. Lourdes Gurriel Jr. is a guy who's looked great in flashes and recently made the transition to the outfield and looked okay defending out there, but there's still more to learn about him. Teoscar Hernandez is a guy who's had some really, really high peaks in his career and some really deep valleys. And he's been searching for that consistency, needs the reps to try to figure it out. Randall Grichuk is a guy who's really working on his plate approach, his two-strike approach, and his discipline, trying to cut down on the strikeouts and, you know, increase the walks or at least have some more competitive at-bats he's had in the past. So, you know, these are all progressions and steps and things that we're trying to learn about these Blue Jays hitters that we're not going to see right now. And, you know, with whatever amount of baseball that we get this year, it's going to be something we're going to have to keep a very close eye on.
I mean, if Grittich just plays the Yankees every game, he'll be fine because, I mean, he was destroyed us last year. That name just gave me a cringe when you said it. So that guy has been a thorn in our side for sure, and I'm not looking forward to seeing him again against the Yankees, because there's just for some reason there's these Yankee killers that just they're random names usually, and they just stick around and they always come back. Yeah, it's one of those things in Yankees history that does not stop happening.
Grissom had a 93 OPS plus last season, so I think it was only the Yankees.
Yeah, of course. So when you're looking at those guys, which one do you see? Do you think Bichette's probably is? Do you think he's the most well-rounded as far as those three young guys? Do you think he's got the ability to be the best all around?
It's interesting because they're all fairly unique. You know, mm-hmm. Bo Bichette is one of the more confident individuals I've come across in this game at an extremely young age. His approach is very advanced. He has a great two-strike approach. You know, you'll see him when he's early in the count or if he has one strike, take some really big cuts. And sometimes he'll connect and hit the ball an awfully long way. And sometimes he'll get fooled and he'll, you know, borderline almost fall over swinging in the box. But once he gets the two strikes, cuts down his leg kick, quiets his swing, and just battles and has a really good ability to fight off pitchers' pitches and to, you know, let the ball kind of get deep and figure out where it's going to be and take some tough pitches and then get to something that he can hit. His two-strike approach is really advanced. So I think that's, you know, those are some tools that are going to allow him to be really good as an offensive presence in MLB for a long time. And then, you know, defensively, it's a work in progress at shortstop, but he has come a really long way. And he's, you know, if there was going to be a season, he's going to play every day for the Blue Jays at shortstop and hit leadoff. So it was going to be fascinating just to continue seeing his development. Kevin Biggio is a guy who has one of the best eyes in baseball, like objectively. I mean, he has just elite plate vision, which is almost to his detriment sometimes, the discipline and the approach that he has, because he kept, you know, teams kind of figured out about him last season. Hey, if you throw this guy a first pitch fastball right down the middle, like, he's probably going to take it. He is just so patient and disciplined and so, you know, attuned to working long plate appearances. That was something Kevin Biggio had to kind of adjust to last year, with being more aggressive and, you know, not getting deep into counts and relying on his plate vision. But so he's different in that way. And then Vladimir Guerrero Jr. is a guy who's got all the tools to be an elite offensive talent, MVP caliber player in baseball. And, you know, just as I was alluding to earlier, learned some hard lessons last year. And when it comes to his conditioning and his routines, and, you know, it's going to be trying to, you know, figure that out going forward. So, you know, to answer your question, I can see all of them being really good major leaguers. I think Vladimir Guerrero Jr. probably has the highest ceiling in terms of just the uncommon potential that he has. But, I mean, you know, so far in terms of the MLB debuts these guys have had, Bo Bichette has by far had the most success.
Obviously, the position players are probably the talk from everybody else's standpoint. When you're looking at the Blue Jays from the outside, the pitching staff has definitely had a transformation. Stroman obviously traded away last year to the Mets. You and I had an interesting conversation last time we spoke about Stroman and, you know, how there was just an interesting clubhouse fit with some of the guys that were on that team. Ryu now comes over. That was a surprise for me that he signed with Toronto. Obviously been a phenomenal pitcher with the Dodgers. You know, one of those guys who's just a really steady, steady workhorse guy in your rotation. So what does the rotation look like with Ryu coming in to lead it now? And then if you could touch a little bit on Stroman and what that exit looked like.
Well, maybe I'll start with Stroman and what the exit looked like. You know, you kind of mentioned the impact they had on the Blue Jays clubhouse.
Yeah.
It was certainly a motivation in the Blue Jays trading him. I think, you know, the fact that I think Bo Bichette came up like a couple days after Marcus Stroman was traded, you know, like, and I don't think it was necessarily a coincidence. And
sure.
Like, I'll relay this story. Like, on the day that Marcus Stroman was traded, the Blue Jays were playing a game. I believe the trade happened either, you know, during the game or immediately after it, or word was kind of getting out that it was happening. And on that day, the Blue Jays did not open their clubhouse. And I've been covering the team for, I don't know, 6-7 years now. And that's the only day they haven't opened their clubhouse. And it was because Marcus Stroman had been notified that he was being traded. And they were not letting us into the environment and the scene that was playing out in there. So that kind of gives you an indication of you know, the exit was, there was some animosity there. As far as Hyunjin Ryu is concerned,
Quickly, to Stroman, it's not like it was a surprise. I mean, he was chirping on literally on Twitter before it even happened. Like, the guy was setting himself up for a trade, it seemed like, for months. So, I mean, if he's just a... you know, a hothead that wants to react. It's not like he was surprised that something like that was going to happen. He couldn't have been.
Well, yeah, and it feels like a million years ago now, right?
Yeah,
I do. You know, the kind of the some of the things Marcus Stroman was saying on social media about the Blue Jays front office, and you know, he was very public and saying, you know, they don't want to sign me to an extension. You know, I'm you know, understanding that I'm going to be traded. Like, he knew for sure.
Yeah, yeah.
I think he just had some things that he wanted to express after it finally had happened. But yeah, you know, and look, he really like took away a lot of the Blue Jays leverage in those trade negotiations, like coming out and saying they don't want to extend me, you know, because that was kind of what the Blue Jays needed, was to say, hey, look, we could always extend Marcus Stroman, you know, we could always sign him long term. That was never going to be the case. And it was never something that was going to happen. And Marcus Stroman came out very publicly, said that. And it was very clear, I think, to everyone in baseball that the Blue Jays were very motivated to trade Marcus Stroman. And partly because he was coming out and saying on Twitter, they want to trade me.
Right.
So, you know, all those things considered, Blue Jays still did pretty well in that deal, it appears. They got, you know, two young pitchers, one in Anthony Kay from the Mets, who made his MLB debut last season and is probably sitting somewhere around 6 or 7 on the, you know, starting pitching depth chart. And it's kind of a polished lefty who I expect to make starts for his team this year. And Simeon Woods Richardson, who's still a teenager, but is starting to pop up on top 100 prospect lists and has a ton of potential and is moving very quickly through the minor leagues. So the Blue Jays did decently well, I'd say, you know, considering they were moving a disgruntled asset and didn't have a ton of leverage.
Yeah, no, I agree with you. I think he definitely put them in a position that was not of strength for sure. But, you know, what they did get, I think, is a complete... It seems like a polar opposite, a guy that comes in, does a good job every single time he's out there, and can lead a pitching staff in Ryu.
Right. Yeah, you asked me about Ryu. So, look, the Blue Jays were incredibly motivated to add a top frontline MLB starting pitcher in free agency. Like, they engaged with Gerrit Cole. You know, they were ready to make him an offer. I just don't think Gerrit Cole was coming to Toronto. And obviously, he ended up in a pretty good situation in New York with, you know, a whole bunch of money in his bank account. You know, they were engaged on essentially every starting pitcher, you know, on the market. Missed out on some guys, you know, weren't willing to go to certain, you know, terms and dollars with certain pitchers. Some pitchers just didn't want to come to Toronto. Some found better opportunities. And I think they got to a point where, you know, Hyunjin Ryu was one of the final big names available and the final impact arms out there. Blue Jays said, look, we're going to go to a point that other teams won't. And that was 4 years and $80 million. And it's a risk considering his injury history, considering his age, considering he's going to be moving to a tougher league to pitch in, a tougher division to pitch in, you know, to play in front of a worse defense than he had with the Dodgers. And this is a guy where the ball's in play a lot. Doesn't strike a ton of guys out. It's gonna be tough for him to replicate some of the, you know, Cy Young worthy numbers that he put up in Los Angeles. But the Blue Jays were just incredibly motivated to get a frontline starter, and they got him. in Hyunjin Ryu. And behind him, they also, you know, remade some of their pitching staff in order to address the fact that the Blue Jays did just not have dependability in 2019. They used 21 starting pitchers over the course of the season, which is insane. And a lot of those are openers, but a lot of them were also just desperation plays, like Edwin Jackson, who made five starts for the team and had something like an 11 ERA. They turned to a fellow by the name of Ryan Feuerbend, who is a left-handed knuckleballer, 34, who hadn't pitched in the majors in, you know, 3 or 4 years. You know, the Blue Jays were just desperate for pitching. So they went out and acquired Chase Anderson by a trade from Milwaukee and signed Tanner Roark for 2 years and $24 million. And those aren't sexy names. Those aren't guys that are going to win Cy Young Awards or necessarily be all-stars. But they are guys who are going to take the ball every 5 days. They're guys who have been incredibly durable. The Blue Jays just haven't had that. And considering, you know, they're relying on Hyunjin Ryu atop their rotation and his injury struggles are very well documented. And then Matt Shoemaker, also in their rotation, who has a ton of potential and has been great when he's been healthy and on the field, but has suffered just such a string of catastrophic injuries from, you know, being hit in the head with a line drive to having persistent nerve issues in his forearm that were mysterious and nobody could figure out, to last season in his fifth start of the year after he had gone off to a terrific beginning of the season. He had an ERA below two, tearing his ACL in a rundown. So there is some uncertainty there when it comes to injuries. So the Blue Jays went out and got two inning eaters, durable guys, and Anderson and Roark, who they think are really going to help their rotation. And then beyond those four that I mentioned, Ryu, Anderson, Roark, Shoemaker, they're going to kind of have that fifth spot open to whoever wants to claim it, whether it's Trent Thornton, who is you know, the 26-year-old right-hander with a bunch of pitches who went pole to pole with the Blue Jays last season, mostly by necessity because they had no one else. He had like a 5 ERA, but is somebody that they can dream on if he can kind of figure it out and find out how to harness his wide repertoire and find things that are going to work for him consistently. Or, you know, I mentioned Anthony Kay. They signed Shun Yamaguchi out of NPB in Japan, who is one of the better pitchers in Japan last season, and they're hoping that, you know, he can transfer his success over there with his split finger fastball, you know, to come over to MLB and have some success. Or they've got some interesting young pitchers coming up through the system, led by Nate Pearson, who, you know, is setting Twitter on fire with 100 mile an hour fastballs and wicked breaking stuff. So, you know, the Blue Jays, as much as we talked earlier about what they learned about their hitters last year, this season, whenever it happens and if it happens, you know, the Blue Jays are planning to learn something about their pitchers.
Yeah, and I think the deal for Ryu, even, yeah, they may have, you know, overextended in the years, and it seems like in this past market, that's what you kind of had to do. You had to overextend yourself to get the guy that you wanted. But you look at the AAV, and it's really not that, it's really not, you know, out of line when you see what Jay Happ is making at 17 a year. You get a guy like Ryu coming in at 20. It's you know, yes, maybe you didn't want to go for that fourth year, but at the end of the day, like, that's a relatively, if he can stay on the field and give you, you know, up to 200 innings in a full season, if that were ever to be the case, then, you know, I think that's a great value for a guy like him with the type of production that he does have.
And the Blue Jays can afford it. You know, we're looking this year at like maybe a $100 to $110 million payroll for this team. And this is a club that, you know, just, you know, 3 or 4 years ago was running $165, $170 million payrolls and can clearly afford to do that, considering it's a big market team and they got a huge stadium that they sell out when the team is good. And, you know, Rogers Communications, a very, you know, big corporate owner. And most of the roster is 0 to 3 year service time guys. Mm-hmm. Obichette, Kevin Biggio, Vladimir Guerrero Jr., you know, Lourdes Gurriel Jr. is on a very affordable contract. Teoscar Hernandez hasn't hit arbitration yet. I mean, the majority of their roster is very cheap and very affordable. So they can afford to extend themselves for a guy like Ryu. And like, they aren't expecting, you know, four seasons of 200 innings from him. You know, I think if they got four seasons of 130 innings each season, at something close to, you know, the ERA and peripherals that he's shown in recent years with the Dodgers when he's been healthy, I think the Blue Jays will be more than happy paying what they did for that.
It's crazy how the numbers have changed. 130 innings, looking at that as a good value now for $20 million a year. That's crazy. Before we wrap up and I get your kind of projections where you think this team's going to land here, let's just touch on some former Yankees that I know people might be interested about. Brandon Drury, Billy McKinney, guys that are still with the Toronto Blue Jays system. McKinney potentially going out for one of those outfield spots. I know the outfield is kind of an uncertain lay right now with a bunch of guys vying for different spots, but has options, so there's potential there. And then Brandon Drury, we know, has just been, you know, struggling ever since he had those issues with the tunnel vision and migraines and things like that. So if you give us an update on those guys, be good.
Yeah, Brandon Drury played a lot for the Blue Jays last season. Yeah. You know, I think he was up around 450 plate appearances. So like was on the field and just not performing is the thing. You know, he just did not hit well, defended well. I thought he was great at third base, honestly, which is where he was playing before Vladimir Guerrero Jr. got to the majors. He kind of kept that spot warm for him early in the season. I thought he flashed some great defense. And then when Vlad got up, Drury kind of moved around and played a little bit everywhere. Like I remember games where, you know, he played at shortstop. He played in left and right. He was playing second. He would play first. Like they just kind of used him everywhere. So he provided some utility that way. It just was not a successful offensive season for him. 70 OPS plus over 447 plate appearances. Not what you want. But, you know, he is, you know, a lot of teams, the Yankees included, have seen the potential that he has. You know, if this guy could put it together, and as you mentioned, get past some of the physical ailments that have held him back in the past, which, you know, include migraines and vision issues and, you know, some issues that maybe, you know, brain injury hasn't always brought up to his team, and that he's just been, you know, content to play through because he's just kind of that kind of guy. Just put my head down and keep working and don't complain. You know, sometimes that can be to a player's detriment. So if he gets healthy and he kind of figures out what he's doing at the plate, this is a hard worker and a guy with some potential. So we've seen players figure it out at, you know, the age of 28, 29. You know, Josh Donaldson was a quad A guy at one point. The guy has a lot of potential. He couldn't put it together. And people kind of were like, oh man, I guess it's just not going to happen for him. And then all of a sudden he becomes an MVP. So you never write a player off. If Brandon Drury is going to continue to get opportunities on this team in 2020, or whatever 2020 ends up being, going through spring, you know, before the postponement and everything, I had him on my opening day roster when I was projecting it for the Blue Jays. I figured he was going to be there. He's going to have opportunities to play, but, you know, at a certain point, he's going to have to show something. And Billy McKinney's a guy who, you know, as you guys know, hard worker, another guy who you can kind of see that potential, right? Like there's a reason why he was a first round pick, you know, like left-handed outfielder, good defender, athletic, has some pop. The on-base just hasn't really been there for him in the majors. He's struck out a lot, and a lot of players struggle to kind of make that transition to a higher level of pitching in the minors when they, you know, have some reasonably impressive minor league numbers, as McKinney does. You know, he's got an .834 OPS at AAA. Over 167 games. So, you know, that's strong. And the Blue Jays will continue trying to see if they have something there with him. He's just kind of he's kind of the outside looking in of a outfield logjam right now with the Blue Jays. They got Lourdes Gurriel Jr. in left, Teoscar Hernandez in center, and Randall Grichuk in right. Actually, this year will probably be Randall Grichuk in center and Teoscar Hernandez in right. Either way, those are the three guys that are going to get the majority of the outfield playing time. Then beyond them, there are two outfielders and Derek Fisher and Anthony Alford who are out of options. And so the Blue Jays, you know, likely with one or both of them, carry them into the regular season so that they don't have to expose them to waivers. You know, Derek Fisher, I think, is on the team, and Anthony Alford, Blue Jays are really trying to learn something about him this spring and see if they're going to carry him into the season or expose him to waivers. But either way, those two guys are ahead of McKinney, who has options. And when you're in that position, a lot of the time you can end up, the team's just going to utilize those in order to preserve its depth. Billy McKinney kind of rode the shuttle between AAA Buffalo and Toronto last season a lot. He was up and down a lot. I would expect that'll be the case again in 2020. It's just the position that he's in. But, yeah, two interesting guys. And, you know, and when you look back at that Jay Happ deal, I think, the Yankees certainly got the better of it initially. And I know Happ's had his struggles recently. But the Blue Jays really could have used a pitcher like Happ in the last couple of years, and they didn't have him.
Hey, man, Happ's looking like Cy Young in the first part of spring training this year. So I think we got a guy now that's super motivated. I don't even know what that trade looks like with him at this point. He's an interesting guy too. And you talked about service time even earlier. But you know what's going to happen now with all of these guys and the incentives and how the kicker for a third year on his option. I think it was 160 innings. So all of these now are going to be on, you know, percentage tickers. Like, you know, what are we doing with that? It's going to be a whole other animal that baseball is going to have to deal with. But interesting.
Almost need like a new CBA just for this.
I know, right? Yeah,
with everything that has this because it really does impact everything.
Right? It does.
Service time, super two, yeah. Options, bonuses, mm-hmm. incentives. I mean, it impacts so many things that you almost need to just draft a fresh CBA for this season only, and then return to the other one for 2021.
I mean, they have 8 weeks now to get on Microsoft Teams or Slack or whatever they want, you know, all these guys, and just figure something out. You know, we got some time here where everybody's at home. Let's just figure that out first for a little while, anticipate, you know, so a couple different start dates, and let's just get this going. You know, we can do this. I know it. We have no idea what's going to happen this season, obviously. So I'm not even going to ask, you know, who you think is going to win, because to me, it's going to be a crapshoot almost, especially if it's such a shortened season. But more of kind of a broad stroke question: how far off do you think the Blue Jays are from becoming a legit contender? You know, with all the young talent, and when do you think this is really going to come to fruition, and they're going to be, a major problem in the AL East? Because, I mean, I don't think anybody really sees it for this year necessarily, unless there's, you know, that tournament style crapshoot where they get really hot, because that could happen. But playing out over, you know, a full season, 162 games, how do you how far off do you think this team could be?
Yeah, you know, in a pre-COVID-19 world, I had the Blue Jays like somewhere around 78 to 82 wins this season. Kind of depending on health and depending on luck and you know, how guys progress. So, you know, that's obviously not going to get it done in any division, but especially not in the American League East. That would still also be a dramatic improvement over where the Blue Jays were in 2019. And that's, so I was expecting this to kind of be a bridge year to something closer to contention in 2021. As some of the young players in the system continue to build their way up, and as the Blue Jays continue to learn things about young players who've already made their MLB debuts and continue to look for opportunities to trade for win now talent and sign win now talent. I mean, that was the big thing the Hyunjin Ryu signing indicated, was that the Blue Jays are, you know, willing to acquire players that can be very impactful in the near term, and to pay a financial cost to that in free agency, and I know they would be willing to do this as well if the right opportunity presented itself, pay a prospect cost through trade. So I expected 2020 to be a bit of a bridge year to 2021, when I expected the Blue Jays to be, kind of going for it, really, and win now, and trying to basically be a winner in the early years of Vladimir Guerrero Jr. and Bo Bichette's service time, and Kevin Biggio and Nate Pearson, and really maximize what you can do when you have players like that providing so much surplus value. Now, the way this season is playing out, or how it will play out, that obviously puts everything into flux, and that puts everything into question, and that's going to change things a lot for this team. So it's hard to say, like, whether that sets the Blue Jays back, or how much it sets them back, or, you know, what things are going to look like on the other end of it. But that was what I was expecting, and it's going to be very interesting just to see, you know, what the challenges of this year to impact when this team can win again and contend again. A lot of us were expecting it to be 2021. We'll see how this plays out.
All right, Arden, where can everybody follow you and keep up on what's happening with the Blue Jays on Twitter?
Twitter is just my name, Arden Zwelling, and sportsnet.ca is where you can, you know, get all the Blue Jays coverage myself and Shai Davidi and Ben Nicholson-Smith are my colleagues who cover the team along with me at sportsnet.ca. And, you know, obviously Sportsnet broadcasts the Blue Jays. Whenever there are games to broadcast, we'll be there on television and radio. And the podcast is at the letters that Ben and Shai collaborate with me on. That's at sportsnet.ca. So, you know, it's all platforms coverage of a game that's not being played right now.
Beautiful. And hopefully, you know, when I talk about the different guys that cover the sports or the different teams, you're one of the guys I want to drink a beer with. Like, I could see us having a beer and enjoying some baseball talk. So hopefully when the Blue Jays, if the Blue Jays play the Yankees somewhere in the Bronx or somewhere on a baseball field, that you and I can get within 6 feet of each other and share a beer at some point. So appreciate it.
I'd be happy to bump elbows with you anytime.
All right, man. Take care of yourself, and yeah, we'll talk to you soon.
Thanks. Be well.
Hey, guys. Thanks for listening to the Bronx Pinstripe Show. Make sure you find us on iTunes and subscribe so you can get all new episodes directly onto your phone. If you do like the show, we'd love for you to take a minute and give us a 5-star rating and review in iTunes. It really helps us out and allows us to create more shows. We're on Twitter at Bronx Pinstripes and the same on Facebook. You can always find us there talking Yankee baseball. Thanks again, guys, for your support. Really appreciate it. And go Yankees.
Without the ones like you who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.